Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, November 23rd, 2020. Coming up this hour,
stocks rise on word COVID vaccines could be just weeks away.
AstraZeneca is out with new results on its shot, and we'll bring you all the details.
GOP pressure mounts on President Trump to concede.
And Joe Biden prepares to unveil top cabinet picks.
Governor Cuomo says Staten Island has a serious COVID-19 problem. Plus, a Brooklyn synagogue is being investigated for hosting a wedding with thousands of guests. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshauer in sports. The Jets are 0-10. They lost to the Chargers in L.A. The Chiefs last night scored late to beat the Raiders.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York. Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 1061 Boston. Bloomberg 960 San Francisco. Sirius XM 119. And around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business App.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and U.S. futures are gaining to start the week. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 23 points, Dow futures up 209, NASDAQ futures up 49, the DAX in Germany's up 0.9%, CAC in Paris up 0.75%, and the FTSE 100 up 0.3%. 10-year Treasury down 9/32, yield 0.85%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.16%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.6% or 66 cents at $43.80 a barrel, and COMEX gold is down 0.3%. Nathan.
Karen, the lift we're seeing in markets this morning may be driven by hopes for a coronavirus vaccine. The Food and Drug Administration will meet on December 10th to discuss an emergency use authorization for Pfizer's shot. Dr. Monsef Slaoui with Operation Warp Speed says once it's approved, the next steps would happen very quickly.
Our plan is to be able to ship vaccines to the immunization sites within 24 hours from the approval. So I would expect maybe on day two after approval, on the 11th or on the 12th of December.
Dr. Slaoui appeared on CNN's State of the Union, but before vaccines go out, the virus continues to spread almost exponentially. The U.S. is now averaging about 110,000 more new cases every day than it did just a month ago. Hospitalizations jumped 36% over 8 days last week, and the country's most infected county, Los Angeles, is shutting down restaurants again starting Wednesday. Dr. Anthony Fauci says people need to keep following health experts' advice.
I'm not talking about locking everything down. I'm talking about universal wearing of masks, physical distancing, avoiding crowds, particularly indoor, keeping the masks on indoor, doing things outdoors more than indoors, and washing your hands. Those are relatively easy things to do.
Dr. Fauci was on CBS's Face the Nation, heard here on Bloomberg Radio.
We have fresh vaccine data out of Europe this morning. AstraZeneca and the University of Oxford say their shot has prevented a majority of people from getting the disease. But as Bloomberg's Sandra Kilhoff explains, the showing is not as strong as others.
The AstraZeneca-Oxford vaccine falls short of the high bar set by Pfizer and Moderna, according to initial results of a large trial. The data found the vaccine stopped an average of 70% of participants in a study from falling ill. That's far below the 95% efficacy rate achieved by its two rivals. Though it's an easier vaccine to ship, this does create a headache for the UK, EU and several other countries, which will need broader vaccinations to achieve herd immunity. In London, Sandra Kilhoff, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Sandra, thanks. Meantime, the U.S. or the virus has health officials issuing new warnings when it comes to cruises. Let's get the latest on that live from Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
And Nathan, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control escalating its warning for cruise travel to the highest level. Officials say there's, quote, a very high risk of COVID-19 on cruise ships. They recommend avoiding any trip on any ship worldwide. Well, just last month, the agency had published a framework for cruise lines to resume operations. The eight-month shutdown has been catastrophic for the industry. Earlier this month, Carnival paused U.S. operations through the end of January. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Turning to politics now, President Trump is facing growing pressure from fellow Republicans to concede. GOP members like Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota are calling for the transition to Joe Biden to begin. He spoke on NBC's Meet the Press, heard on Bloomberg Radio.
It's past time to start a transition, to at least cooperate with the transition. I'd rather have a president that has more than one day to prepare should Joe Biden, you know, end up winning this.
All signs do point to a Biden win after Georgia certified its election results on Friday. At the same time, the Trump campaign suffered another legal blow. A Pennsylvania judge threw out a lawsuit aimed to block certification of the state's results. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie weighed in on ABC's This Week, also heard on Bloomberg Radio.
The president's legal team has been a national embarrassment. I voted for him twice, but elections have consequences. And we cannot continue to act as if something happened here that didn't happen.
Still, the Trump campaign is not giving up. They're appealing the Pennsylvania decision. Attorney Rudy Giuliani says he wants to take the case to the Supreme Court.
While it's shut down from an official transition, Joe Biden's team is pushing ahead. The president-elect starts naming cabinet members tomorrow, according to Chief of Staff Ron Klain.
You're going to see the first of the president-elect's cabinet appointments on Tuesday of this week. Beating the pace that was set by the Obama-Biden transition, beating the pace set by the Trump transition.
Klain was on ABC's This Week, heard on Bloomberg Radio. Sources tell us Biden plans to name his longtime advisor, Antony Blinken, as Secretary of State. Blinken served as National Security Advisor and Deputy Secretary of State under Barack Obama. We're also told Jake Sullivan, former aide to Hillary Clinton, will likely be named National Security Advisor.
As the pandemic grips most of the world, global leaders are urging countries not to lose sight of climate goals. Participants at a virtual G20 meeting once again endorsed the aims of the Paris Agreement as President Trump continues to oppose it.
The Paris Accord was not designed to save the environment. It was designed to kill the American economy. I refuse to surrender millions of American jobs and send trillions of American dollars to the world's worst polluters and environmental offenders.
The U.S. formally exited the Paris Accord earlier this month. G20 leaders are hoping Joe Biden will rejoin the agreement when he takes office.
Meantime, the current president is continuing his push to rein in Chinese tech companies. The Trump administration will reportedly ban tech exports to 89 Chinese aerospace and other firms. Reuters says the companies have ties to the Chinese military. It's a move that could escalate tensions as the Biden administration prepares to take over. This is Bloomberg. It is now 5:07 on Wall Street. Time to check the latest headlines out of New York and around the world. For that, we turn to Michael Barr. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Holiday travelers are already swarming airports ahead of the Thanksgiving travel rush, ignoring CDC warnings that travel could further fuel an already raging pandemic. And it has tri-state leaders concerned. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is threatening to shut down businesses in parts of New York City.
Parts of Staten Island will go into an orange zone. Parts of Staten Island will go into a red zone at the current rate. Staten Island is a serious problem. Staten Island is also a problem in terms of overburdening hospitals.
Newark, New Jersey Mayor Ras Baraka says he's locking down the city the day before Thanksgiving.
It would be irresponsible, criminal even, for me to know what happened in the past, watch this thing create itself again, and stand by and do nothing.
Hospitalizations in New Jersey and New York each report more than 2,500 patients in hospitals ahead of Thanksgiving. In Connecticut, Congressman Joe Courtney has tested positive for COVID-19. The Democratic lawmaker says he is experiencing mild symptoms. Governor Cuomo says a Brooklyn synagogue should be investigated over reports that it hosted a secret wedding with thousands of unmasked guests earlier this month. Cuomo says that such a wedding would be a blatant disregard of the law. The New York Post reported that guests crammed shoulder to shoulder in Williamsburg for the November 8th wedding, a violation of coronavirus restrictions. A spokesman for New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says the city is investigating. For the third time, Georgia will count its ballots. It comes after a request from President Trump. Georgia's voting system implementation manager, Gabrielle Sterling, says he does not expect this second recount to change anything. He pushed back on claims from the Trump campaign that there were issues with the signature verification of absentee ballots.
It's always been open to the public. It's always been available. We have no evidence that anything was done that didn't follow the rule of the law.
Sterling says the recount should be finished by December 8th. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. It's 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stashower.
All right, good morning, Nathan. Twice an NFL team has gone 0-16. 2008 Detroit Lions, 2017 Cleveland Browns. The Jets are 0-10. They have come closer the last two games, but yesterday could not overcome a first half that saw them trail the Chargers 24-6. The Jets made it a little interesting in the second half, but L.A. held on 34-28. Chargers have themselves an impressive rookie quarterback. Justin Herbert shredded gangrene, 37-49, 356 yards, 3 touchdowns. Pittsburgh is 10-0, easy win at Jacksonville. The Steelers own a 3-game lead in their division. New Orleans, with 7 wins in a row, is now an NFC best, 8-2. The Saints are now without Drew Brees, but Taysom Hill made his first NFL start, passed and ran the Saints to a win over Atlanta. Kansas City improved to 9-1. The only loss was to the Raiders. The Chiefs avenged that last night in Las Vegas, winning 35-31. KC won it on a Patrick Mahomes TD pass to Travis Kelce in the final minute. Two games went overtime. Indianapolis came from 2 touchdowns down to beat Green Bay. And Tennessee won at Baltimore on a game-winning 29-yard touchdown run by Derrick Henry. The Ravens went 14-2 last year. They've now lost 3 of their last 4. They've dropped to 3rd place in their division. The Giants were off. They saw Philadelphia lose in Cleveland, but Dallas and Washington both won. So all 4 teams in the NFC East now have the same number of wins, 3. Giants play Cincinnati Sunday. The Bengals just lost their rookie quarterback, Joe Burrow, to a season-ending knee injury. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
All right, John, thank you. Let's take a look at markets this morning. Definitely seeing a risk-on feel on positive vaccine news once again. AstraZeneca's trials have been reported. 70% effectiveness, at least, on the Astra-Oxford shot. We'll get into those details in the minutes ahead here with Sam Fazzelli, senior pharma analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence. Meantime, taking a look at markets, S&P futures are higher by 22 points, Dow futures ahead by 208, NASDAQ futures a gain of 45 points, 10-year down 7/32, the yield 0.84% on the 10-year note. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer or call 1-800-FIND-4WD for special offers at the Land Rover Season of Adventure sales event now through January 4th. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And global stocks, U.S. stock index futures, and oil all advancing as AstraZeneca said its vaccine prevented most people from developing COVID-19. Energy and banking shares are leading markets higher in Europe, while South Korea's stocks hit a record. The vaccine announcements have added to the risk-on mood in markets as investors look forward to the end of the pandemic. Oil futures in New York rising past $43 a barrel after capping their third straight weekly gain. Treasuries and gold, well, the 10-year treasury is moving lower now with the yield moving higher. And the dollar is weakening against its major peers. We now check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 22 points. Dow futures up 206. NASDAQ futures, they're up 50. The DAX in Germany is up 1%. The CAC in Paris is up 0.8%. And the FTSE 100 up 0.3%. No trading in Japan today. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong was up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury down 7/32, yield 0.84%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.16%. And the 30-year yield, 1.55%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.4%. It's up 59 cents. It's at $43.01 a barrel. Brent is also higher, up 1.6% or 72 cents at $45.68. COMEX gold is down about 0.4%, down $7.10 at $1,871.10 an ounce. The euro, 1.1880 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3370. And the yen this morning at 103.76. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. President-elect Joe Biden intends to name his longtime advisor Anthony Blinken as Secretary of State. That's according to 3 people familiar with the matter. In addition, Jake Sullivan, formerly one of Hillary Clinton's closest aides, is likely to be named Biden's National Security Advisor. And Linda Thomas-Greenfield will be nominated to serve as Biden's ambassador to the United Nations. Biden's incoming White House Chief of Staff, Ron Klain, says the president-elect will be making his initial cabinet announcements tomorrow. All eyes are on Michigan and Pennsylvania today, who are scheduled to certify the election results. China is lashing out at Washington over its withdrawal from the Open Skies Treaty with Russia, saying the move undermines military trust and transparency and imperils future attempts at arms control. The treaty, to which China is not a signatory, had allowed each country to overflight rights to inspect military facilities. A panel of human rights experts working with the United Nations says former Renault-Nissan boss Carlos Ghosn was wrongly detained in Japan and has urged compensation and other reparations for him from the Japanese government. In the NFL, the Jets lost. Along with the Ravens and Patriots, Washington won. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. Coming up to 521 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager. Let's get more now on the results we're getting from AstraZeneca on its COVID-19 vaccine candidate. Bloomberg Intelligence senior pharma analyst Sam Fazeli joins us live. I know you're still digging into these numbers, Sam, but walk us through the data we're getting so far. It seems like it's more effective in some dosing regimens than in others.
Yes, good morning, Nathan. So it's a bit complicated. You really have to read it all to get to what looks like to be a clarifying picture. If you read further down the press release, they tell you that the trial in the UK tested half a dose and then a full dose. The trial in Brazil tested two full doses. So that 62% that we're seeing, if that connection is correct that I'm making here, is actually data coming out of the much larger sample size in Brazil versus the 90% that we're seeing in the UK, which is a smaller sample size. So what is it between those two groups? Why? It can't be that you give a higher dose to start with and you get a lower immune response. So it's a pretty complicated picture they've painted here. I think the easiest thing, Nathan, to do is to run with the 70% that they add up the patients together and say that's the effective efficacy of this vaccine.
Well, one data point that a lot of analysts are focusing on is this 90% effectiveness line when you get a half dose first and then a full dose later. What to make of that?
Yeah, so my maths that I've just literally worked out suggests that that comes from probably 33 cases in the interim analysis. And that really is not a number that I want to focus on. It's just too little. If this had been Pfizer or Moderna telling this number to us, we would have gone, no, come back with more, please. So why are we ignoring the much higher, probably closer to 100 cases in the other assessment, which came back to 62%?
All right. So does there still need to be U.S. study that needs to be done before this can be approved by the Food and Drug Administration? What more research needs to go into this AstraZeneca?
Oh, I mean, like all the other vaccines, Nathan, we need a hell of a lot more detail to understand really what's going on with these vaccines in terms of the details between the types of people who are responding and not responding, et cetera. But for the U.S. specifically to your question, that phase three trial is ongoing and they're recruiting. I'm now a little bit worried as to what does this mean if people see that 62%, 70% number. Is this going to be something that they're going to be incentivized to go and really go back for their second shots or even for their first shot when they're invited into the trial?
And in our last 30 seconds or so here, what about the possibility that we could see different types of vaccines approved for different countries and the types of effectiveness of care that people could get depending on where they are?
Yep, so this is becoming now, as these vaccines will read out, an issue. If you're going to get more vaccines in this kind of diversity of efficacy, we're going to have to think about what do we do for the different regions. Even within one country, if somebody gets the Astra vaccine and somebody gets the Pfizer vaccine, how do we treat these people and how do we know which one is most immune, et cetera? So that's going to be a pretty big headache for everybody.
Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Pharma Analyst Sam Fazeli, always appreciate getting your insights on Bloomberg Daybreak. Thank you so much. And taking a look at shares of AstraZeneca trading in London this morning, they are down 1.5% on word that the shot is at least 70% effective as we continue to pour through the data on that inoculation. Futures more broadly are higher. S&P futures up 22 points. Dow futures up 211. NASDAQ futures higher by 47 points. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather. Morning showers with some clearing this afternoon. It'll turn breezy. Temperatures falling through the day down to the upper 30s tonight. Sunny, breezy, cool tomorrow. Upper 40s will be in the low 50s by Wednesday. 59 and cloudy in New York.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130.
To Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991.
To Boston.
Bloomberg 1061.
To San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960.
To the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119.
And around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Global stocks are gaining as optimism emerges on a coronavirus vaccine. The first doses of Pfizer's shot could ship in the next 3 weeks. Dr. Moncef Slaoui with Operation Warp Speed tells CNN that's assuming the FDA approves it for emergency use.
With the level of efficacy we have, 95%, 70% or so of the population being immunized would allow for true herd immunity to take place. That is likely to happen somewhere in the month of May.
But there's a long way to go till then. Hospitalizations jumped 36% over just 8 days last week, and the U.S. is averaging about 110,000 more cases a day than it did a month ago. Public health experts are still urging people to wash their hands, wear a mask, and avoid large crowds, especially indoors.
They're also warning about cruises. The CDC has raised its warning for cruise travel to the highest level. It continues to recommend avoiding any trips on cruise ships worldwide.
As the pandemic gathers steam, members of the GOP are ramping up pressure on President Trump to concede the election. Republican senators from North Dakota, Alaska, and Pennsylvania are calling for the transition to Joe Biden to start. So is former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie.
We cannot continue to act as if something happened here that didn't happen. You have an obligation to present the evidence. The evidence has not been presented. And you must conclude, as Tucker Carlson even concluded the other night, that if you're unwilling to come forward and present the evidence, it must mean the evidence doesn't exist.
Georgia certified its election results in favor of Biden. At the same time, the Trump campaign suffered another legal blow. A Pennsylvania judge threw out a lawsuit aimed to block certification of that state's results. The president team does plan to appeal.
Still, President-elect Biden is pushing ahead with his plans for the White House. Sources tell us he plans to name longtime advisor Antony Blinken as Secretary of State. We're also told that Jake Sullivan, a former aide to Hillary Clinton, will likely be named National Security Advisor.
Meantime, a COVID vaccine developed by the University of Oxford and AstraZeneca is preventing a majority of people from getting the disease in a large trial. An early analysis of the data show the vaccine stopped an average of 70% of participants from falling ill.
And S&P futures are up about 21 points this morning. Dow futures up 193 and NASDAQ futures up 41. The 10-year Treasury down 7/32, yield 0.84%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.16%. The euro 1.1880 against the dollar. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
All right. Thank you, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street. Now let's get more on what's going on in New York and around the world. Here's Michael Barr.
Nathan, thank you very much. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says parts of Staten Island have become a serious problem with COVID-19. Cuomo says some areas of Staten Island will go into a red zone at the current rate, and other parts will go into an orange zone. Cuomo again urged New Yorkers to avoid large gatherings.
The problem is that this is a dangerous period because you have increased social activity by definition. That's what happens between now and New Year's Eve.
A secret wedding in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, earlier this month reportedly drew thousands of unmasked guests. Bloomberg's John Tucker reports.
The New York Post reports that guests crammed shoulder to shoulder inside the Yatev Lev Temple in Williamsburg back on November 8th. Not only was social distancing ignored, but so were masks. Governor Cuomo says the synagogue should be investigated and that such an event would be a blatant disregard of the law. A spokesman for Mayor Bill de Blasio says the city is also investigating. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Georgia will count its ballots for the third time following President Trump's formal request for a recount. This round will be conducted by electronic scanner, the same method used in the original election count. Georgia's voting system implementation manager, Gabrielle Sterling, says despite President Trump's accusations, the original signature matching process was open to observation and was completely above board.
We've not seen anything so far that we've been able to investigate that has shown any kind of widespread illegal voting. We know it exists. There's always going to be some level of illegal voting, but not to the 13,000 and not some coordinated effort.
Sterling also says despite this being a holiday period, he and other staff will soldier through. With 21 million Americans receiving unemployment benefits, there are now fears of housing instability across the country. 6.6% of all mortgages, or 3.3 million homes, are now said to be in some stage of delinquency. The ALS Association says a co-founder of the Viral Ice Bucket Challenge has died. Pat Quinn died at age 37. Quinn helped inspire the social media challenge, which has raised more than $200 million worldwide for Lou Gehrig's disease research. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Sports Update with John Stashower.
Nathan, 10 games, 10 losses for the Jets. The Chargers came in 2-7, so there was some hope this might be a chance for a Jet victory, but L.A. led 31-13, hung on to win 34-28. Jets not only winless this season, but in the 10 games that Sam Darnold has missed over the last three seasons, they are 0-10. Darnold may not be the Jets quarterback next year. They could be drafting a new one. The Chargers certainly seem set at quarterback. Rookie Justin Herbert looked terrific yesterday. 37-49, 356 yards, three touchdowns. Giants were off. They got good news in Cleveland. The Browns, having their best season since 1994, beat Philadelphia 22-17. Carson Wentz continues to struggle for Philly. Two more interceptions, including a pick six. The Eagles are 3-6-1. They're still in first place in the NFC East, but the Giants, Dallas, and Washington are all right behind at 3-7. The Cowboys ended a four-game losing streak. They scored late to win at Minnesota 31-28. Washington, with Alex Smith at QB, beat Cincinnati 20-9. The Bengals rookie quarterback Joe Burrow suffered a season-ending knee injury. The Giants play Cincinnati this Sunday. Good one last night in Las Vegas. Four second-half lead changes. The Chiefs scored with 28 seconds left. They beat the Raiders 35-31. Two NBA teams have locked up their young all-stars, Boston with Jason Tatum, Utah, and Donovan Mitchell, the New York area native. They are 22 and 24 years old and both got the same contract, 5 years, $195 million. The Knicks this weekend signed free agents Nerlens Noel and Alec Burks. They're also bringing back Elfrid Payton. The Nets re-signed Joe Harris. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan.
Thank you, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time for the Tri-State Business Report. Here is Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Nomura Holdings plans to introduce flexible work on a permanent basis for its New York and London workers. In a memo seen by Bloomberg, the company says it could support a model in which 50% of its corporate workforce across the company's international offices would work remotely at any one time. Billionaire Paul Singer's Elliott Management has offered about $872 million to buy McDonald's supplier Arista. In a statement today, Elliott said it made the bid November 18th, confirming an earlier Bloomberg News report Arista is the maker of Otis Spunkmeyer cookies. Well, tenants who've been unable to pay rent during the pandemic would have up to 2.5 years to do that without fear of eviction under a bill now before the New Jersey Senate. The so-called People's Bill would give renters 6 months to repay each month of unpaid rent and require all arrears to be paid within 30 months. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Thanks, Ed. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WFLA in Orlando, I'm reporting that the owner of Regal Cinemas has secured a $450 million lifeline.
I'm Steve Potoskin on 1010 Winds in New York. We're looking at stock of Westchester County-based Regeneron after its antibody cocktail received emergency use authorization for treatment of COVID-19 symptoms.
I'm Roger Hearing on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the latest vaccine data from AstraZeneca.
I'm Joan Doniger telling WIOD listeners in Miami about the COVID-fueled tech migration to Florida.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Ford has a way to help dealers sell more used cars.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. This is a holiday-shortened week on Wall Street, but we still get a smattering of earnings. Let's get a preview from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Last week brought us records for both the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the S&P 500 Index, but a resurgence in virus cases is weighing on global markets. Mike Wilson is chief U.S. equity strategist at Morgan Stanley.
We find ourselves at a juxtaposition between the 12-month view, which is unequivocally bullish to us, with this year-end conundrum around, you know, we have a vaccine, but we have to deal with the rising case counts.
Several retailers will be reporting earnings this week, including Best Buy, Dollar Tree, Gap, Urban Outfitters, Nordstrom, Dick's Sporting Goods, and Abercrombie & Fitch. We'll also be hearing from Agilent, Medtronic, Analog Devices, and Dell. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Charlie, thank you. Rebalancing flows may lead to an exodus of around $300 billion from global stocks by the end of the year. That's according to J.P. Morgan. The bank says large multi-asset investors may need to rotate money into bonds from stocks after strong equity performance this month. Seeing flows into equities this morning with S&P futures up 21 points, Dow futures up 206, NASDAQ futures up 47 points, 10-year down 7/32nds, yield 0.84%. And Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Land Rover. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer or call 1-800-FIND-4WD for special offers at the Land Rover Season of Adventure sales event now through January 4th. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And global stocks and U.S. stock index futures, as well as oil, all advancing as AstraZeneca said its vaccine prevented most people from developing COVID-19. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 21 points this morning. Dow futures up 205. NASDAQ futures up 47. The DAX in Germany is up 0.8%. 10-year Treasury down 7/32nds, yield 0.84%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.16%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.3% or 57 cents at $42.99 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.4% or $7.20 at $18.71 an ounce. The euro 1.1881 against the dollar. British pound 1.3372 and the yen is at 103.73. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, a top cabinet pick by President-elect Joe Biden is expected to be announced soon. According to sources familiar with the decision, Biden is expected to name Antony Blinken, a longtime foreign policy aide with decades of experience, as his nominee for Secretary of State. The announcement could come as soon as tomorrow. China is lashing out at Washington over its withdrawal from the Open Skies Treaty with Russia, saying the move undermines military trust and transparency and imperils future attempts at arms control. In the NFL, the Jets lost along with Ravens and Patriots. Washington won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:48 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And as President-elect Biden continues with efforts to flesh out his eventual government, President Trump is continuing not to concede the election and to fight the election result, not just in court, but potentially pressuring state legislatures to override the vote and declare him the winner in their states. For more, We're joined by Professor Wendy Schiller, chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University. And I guess the latest example we saw of that professor is President Trump inviting the top Republican leaders of the Michigan state legislature to the White House. They say they talked about infrastructure, but there was some concern that the president might put pressure on them to declare electors in his favor. What do you make of how the president has been resisting the transition thus far?
Well, Nathan, I mean, obviously, you're an incumbent. You run for re-election, you lose. That's hard to take. You know, I understand that people can, you know, have opinions about Donald Trump in particular, but any incumbent president that loses, it's a rare thing and it's hard to take. But at this point, it's really the Republican Party. It's really Mitch McConnell. It's Kevin McCarthy. It's a number of other people who are enabling this distortion of what we typically expect from an election when the victory is quite clear. You know, this is not 2000, right? This is not, that was an open seat anyway. It's a situation where to uphold even just the basic faith in basic elections, and the Republicans every day that this goes on, you know, Trump's leaving. He's going to leave one way or the other. It may take a while, but he's leaving. You know, the Republicans that are staying may think, well, we did really well in the elections. We won't suffer any consequences. I'm not so sure about that the longer this goes on. So in some ways, Trump is sort of carving his own path. And he's not necessarily going to help the Republicans, I think, in the short term in Georgia, maybe, but in the long term towards 2022.
Now, we are starting to hear from some more Republicans, including yesterday on Meet the Press, Republican Senator Kevin Cramer of North Dakota saying that while the president's within his rights to challenge legally the result of the election, he should at least begin a transition. Do you see that sort of trickle of Republican sort of change of message having any impact on the president?
Well, I don't think it really starts to matter till next week, right? We have certification today for Pennsylvania. That's going to happen. We understand Secretary of State will do that. Nevada looks like it will certify tomorrow. A couple other Trump states, North Carolina, will certify. And then next week we get closer to Arizona certifying, for example. Michigan might be a question because one person on one commission or two people on a commission who are Republicans may say we won't certify, which causes legal problems, which will delay certification in Michigan. And remember, that's undermining the entire electoral system. That's not just sort of Trump playing around. That's undermining the entire system when Biden won by more than 150,000 votes in Michigan. So these are warning signs, right? This is something that says this could get out of control. Even for incumbent Republicans, this gets out of control when you sanction that kind of behavior. So I think the transition probably won't happen until the head of the GSA signs a piece of paper that says it has to happen. What this points out is that there are problems and flaws in this system that we have, right? States have different ways of doing this, which is ridiculous. It's the national vote for the President of the United States. There isn't any justification except found in the Constitution that states can run their systems differently for certification. So there are bigger lessons, I think, to take from this besides just the fact that we have a president that refuses to concede.
Well, what kind of reforms can be put in place when you have a state-by-state election that has been going on in this fashion for decades?
Well, you know, I was just thinking about this before the call, and I was thinking, I think we passed four constitutional amendments in 10 years between 1910 and 1920. Four constitutional amendments. Ended up repealing one of them, almost prohibition. But nonetheless, you know, this country can change the Constitution when it feels like it needs to. Now, that's really unlikely in this environment, but there's no question that the push to reform at least certification of presidential election results, you know, should come out of this process because it's so destabilizing to have a circumstance where you have the president in power unwilling or refusing to concede and give up power. Luckily, I think for the country, that the president-elect has a lot of experience in Washington. He knows how to find the Oval Office. He knows how it works. But still, it's putting the country at risk. The bigger thing is that people aren't believing the result. And that's a big, you know, that's happened before in some ways, but not on this scale. So I think that's the wake-up call to any incumbent politician who runs in an election where they want to be declared the winner.
Only about 15 seconds left here, but is there any possibility that state legislators could ignore vote counts and choose electors for the president, as his team seems to be indicating it wants to do?
Well, Michigan could ultimately do it. The governor would appoint electors and state legislature would appoint electors, and then Congress would have to choose, which puts the ball in the court of a lame duck Congress. And you'd have to sort of say to yourself, how far are the Republicans willing to go to destabilize the system? I don't think they're willing to go that far.
Professor Wendy Schiller, always good having you on. Thank you so much for your insights. Professor Wendy Schiller is chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University. Karen?
All right, Nathan, thank you. It's 5:54 on Wall Street. It's time for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. And today we're looking at corporations preparing themselves for more enforcement of corporate crime in a Biden administration. Prosecutions of white-collar crime dropped about 30% under the Trump administration, and legal experts say Biden is likely to ramp up enforcement. For more, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Duke University law professor Brandon Garrett, an expert on corporate crime prosecutions.
How's the prosecution of corporate crime likely to change in a Biden administration?
There's a life cycle to corporate frauds. In general, when you have criminal acts conducted within an organization, negative information can stay concealed. You know, the higher-ups in some of these cases in a corporation may not know about the crime. So if they have bad compliance, serious misconduct might stay buried within the corporation. And there hasn't been the same incentive for companies to invest in compliance during these Trump years when they know that enforcement, whether it's civil or criminal, was not a priority. And so misconduct that was swept under the rug or not carefully investigated or not reported to the authorities may start to come out of the woodwork. And we've seen in the past that during an economic downturn, there all of a sudden comes to light malfeasance, misconduct. There's already some reporting around fraud, problematic applications for relief relating to COVID. The economy is suffering because of COVID. And when the economy suffers, there can be incentives for corporations to disguise how poorly their books are faring. Nevertheless, it may take some time for that conduct to be investigated. I suspect that over the next several years, some major corporate investigations will come to light. There will also be more of an incentive for companies to self-report to a Biden administration because they'll be given credit for that. And, you know, no company wants to be in the position of having been caught in the act without having been cooperative, without having self-reported. So more corporate crime may come to the DOJ's attention once it's clear that the DOJ takes corporate crime seriously. And that was what was happening under the Obama administration, a more serious corporate crime approach.
What kind of prosecutions might be the priorities of a Biden Justice Department?
Well, there are such a wide range of white-collar crimes. It is a priority to go after health care fraud. It is a priority to go after bank-related fraud. Securities fraud extends to any public company. It is a priority to target environmental crimes, environmental disasters. Pharmaceutical companies have been prosecuted for unsavory practices. Sure, there will be investigations relating to, you know, efforts to profit from COVID tests or vaccines. There was unsavory conduct, foreign bribery, money laundering has been a big priority. There are just a host of priority areas that have been somewhat neglected in recent years. There's a lot of work for a lot of prosecutors to do, and a lot of that work also depends on investigations and referrals by administrative agencies like the SEC, like the Environmental Protection Agency, like OSHA. So where you similarly had a hollowing out of enforcement at a range of administrative agencies, if enforcement at those agencies becomes more robust, pipeline to prosecutors will also be robust.
And that's Brandon Garrett of Duke Law School speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show at 10 p.m. Eastern Time or subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures are higher, up 22 points. Dow futures up 215. NASDAQ futures up about 47. And the 10-year Treasury down 9/32nds, yield 0.85%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.16%. And NYMEX crude oil up 1.7%, up 71 cents at $43.13 a barrel. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.